I think we're live.
Yep, seems like it.
And running a little late.
Yep.
So for those of you who are joining us online, I'm not Sean, but you are.
But I'm still Charlie.
Okay. So I am Melanie. I'm filling in for Sean today. And so we are doing tech news. So please feel free to put anything in the chat, any questions that you may have, burning technology questions, smoldering technology questions that you might have. And we welcome Bailey here behind the scenes. That's usually my job. And she's me and I'm somebody else. So Charlie, am I starting today?
Yes, if you don't mind.
I'm gonna
kind of look for more, but we will see.
Alrighty. And so that means I get to start. And so for those of you who have not joined us before for Talking Tech, we talk about all types of technology in the news. So all types of different things. And so if there's something, again, that you're interested in, please feel free to put it in the chat. But I am going to start with glue that sticks and unsticks itself. This is so cool. So my background is in education. And so this article particularly interests me because these are scientists in Japan who are looking at how to make glue sometimes be sticky and sometimes not. Those of you who have children, I think, can completely understand this as well. So what they are looking at is the polymer structure and different kinds of compounds and things like that that can be used. So typically what happens is if you try to have a glue or a sticky substance that can come apart, then it obviously then doesn't stick as well. So what the scientists in Japan are trying to do is see if there's a way to change the chemical structure of the glue. So the answer is, I'm probably not going to say this correctly, but I'm going to go with caffeic acid. So according to this article, it is an organic compound found in foods like coffee and apples. And so what this particular acid or organic compound is doing is it reacts differently to UV light. So basically the scientists in Japan are using UV lights to turn off and turn on the sticky aspect of glue. So depending on what wavelength of UV light they're shining on the substance, they can either make the glue sticky or not sticky. So it kind of excites me in terms of the ability to reuse objects or move objects. So they have been doing a whole lot of tests, including gluing 40 kilogram weights together for 72 hours. And then hitting it with UV light to unstick it. So what they're thinking, the practical aspect of this is hopefully reducing weight or waste and allowing components to be taken apart and then recycled separately after they've been stuck together. So I'm kind of excited in this whole idea of being able potentially to recycle more objects because they can break them down to their component parts. I feel like that's cool. I feel like there's so much waste that if they can, that they're able to do that. I mean, they say it's Japanese scientists and they were talking about it being school-wise, but I don't think it's like your bottle of Elmer's that, you know, now you can take apart your, you know, your collage you made in art class.
I mean, it would be nice if it was that easy. It would be kind of like a slight replacement, in my opinion, to like Velcro or something like that too.
Oh, that's true.
But in a squeezable tube and not in strips of plastic and felt.
I kind of feel this is very cool. I would be interested to see how.
And it seems relatively strong as well.
Yeah. So the fact that they're hitting it with UV light, it's not something super complicated, like they're heating it to 1,000 degrees or something like that. it feels like it would be something that perhaps a recycling center could do or someone who who scrapped things, you know, they could separate it into component parts. So I feel like that's pretty cool. I was very excited about that.
The ideas of reusable glues and things, because sometimes it's like some of those things don't work well without glue. So having a removable or restickable glue, kind of like almost like a sticker, would be kind of nice, because it would just make things a little bit nicer to keep together. And if you really didn't like where it was at, you could just stick it somewhere else.
Oh, yeah.
It'd be nice for craft projects that kids get particularly picky about, but or even adults.
Oh,
even.
It looks like we have a comment. I wonder if the glue releases over time in the sun. So the article did not say that they've put it in the sun, but I would assume that that might be the case. And thank you for our commenter hopping on mm-hmm. and commenting. It's good to have someone watching us. Because I wonder if that would then hasten, degrading and landfills and things like that as well. So how are you doing? Do you have an article or do I?
I do.
Okay.
I can kind of segue into like newish technologies.
From glue? Okay.
Well, not glue, but more like antennas.
Okay.
So LG are very good research labs over there with LG have started creating a transparent antenna. So you know, like on cars, there's like the usually the little shark fin that pokes out at the top of your car. That's where the antenna for like your radio and everything else goes. They've developed one that can be put into your car's windshield.
Okay. Yes.
So, I mean, like, you know, obviously repairability kind of thing is kind of
I'm waiting
interesting
to see where
see
this article
this
is going.
Well, it's really not an article. It's only a blog post. But they're not going to... they plan to show it off more at CES in January.
Okay.
But from what I understand is it's going to be on two points of the windshield, and they're going to be just kind of like pressed into either into the windshield or on top of the windshield. But it's supposed to be allowing you to get, you know, your 5G internet and Bluetooth and all this connectivity stuff. But it would make it easier for like radio signals and all this kind of stuff. But it wouldn't have the shark fin anymore on cars, but there's no confirmation on when you'll see it on cars. Of course, LG hasn't announced it or shown it off just yet, just the concept of it so far. But at some point it will become a new technology that we will see more frequently, which is kind of cool to me, I think.
And then I think about the windshield replacement and the number of times I mean, I've had mine replaced because I had a rock hit it, and I've had other people. And I know a couple folks who, now that they're putting like more of the sensors in the windshield, then they couldn't get it done by, you know, the people who advertise on TV. They had to go back to a dealer. Then they didn't have one. Oh, another comment. Cars in the 80s had antennas in the windshields. It was two black lines up the center of the glass. I'm trying to remember if I remember that. I don't know.
I'm assuming it's going to be kind of similar to, you know, like on the back, how you have the defroster for your back windows, but they're going to try to push it towards the top half of the windshield. From the image that they show, it's supposed to be at like the top part of out of the way of the driver view and everything else.
Oh, Morgan, thank you. Remember antennas like that. I feel like I vaguely remember, but not on the cars that my parents had. Okay, so moving from a very new technology to revisiting a technology that was best known in the early 1900s. So the world's largest aircraft is ready for testing. So back in November, an airship called Pathfinder did a test flight in Chicago. It is 400 feet long, so longer than a football field. And it is the largest airship of its kind since the 1930s. So the piece of this article that I find most fascinating is who is funding it, because we always got to know where the money is coming from. So the company is called LTA Research for Lighter Than Air Research. The money comes from one of the two people who started Google. So Sergey Brin is one of the major funders of this. And so they he's working with another gentleman, Alan Weston, and they are looking, they believe that airships are the future of non-polluting, moving large amounts of people and materials. So they have apparently been actually been working on this for the past 10 years. And so this was their first test flight in November. And so one of the big changes is that this is being helium. So back the original, and I think we call them dirigibles and things like that, they were burning hydrogen gas. So this is they're using helium. They're not burning it. There are 13 separate sections of helium that is lifting this airship. So I gotta admit, I'm really kind of interested. It's flying as fast as 75 miles an hour. So, I mean, it's not going super fast, but their argument is that this is potentially a way to replace moving things where they're burning a lot of fossil fuels and they can move it from place to place. I'm just wondering, you couldn't land this that many places. So how is this actually going to work? I mean, I'm fascinated by this, but then the practical aspects of you have to have a space that's bigger than a football field that this can touch down in that then you can empty its contents. So how many places are that, is that really viable that you could land this?
I mean, there's a lot of open places in airports that you could possibly land in. Now, maybe busier ones, not so much, but I could see like maybe they take some sections of airports and turn it into, because if this is going to be the next, supposedly the next generation of air travel, then I could see planes being replaced by these. Thus, the airports start turning into more just drop points and pickup points for these blimps.
I could see that. But the other thing is, so they're saying is interested in using airships to help people out in emergency situations, such as after an earthquake or a hurricane when roads are closed. And there's no place for planes to land. So if there's no place for a plane to land, how are you going to be able to land a 400-foot long blimp?
Wide open field, beaches.
I guess.
Well, beaches as long as you're not too close to the water. As long as it's relatively flat-ish, you should be able to land it, okay. I would think.
I hope so, because it sounds really interesting. Mm-hmm. Oh, another comment. They could drop the cargo via winch like they do with big cargo helicopters, and blimps could hover nearly forever.
That's true.
Well, all right.
They could hover over and people just climb ladders. Well, especially in like emergency situations like that.
I could see that. I mean, I just feel like you're gonna see these people wait. I mean, there are too many like strange images and movie things. I should stop watching. Clearly, I need to stop watching movies, or I would believe that this is a more possible technology.
Mm-hmm.
So it is really cool, though. And I'm still fascinated that it's being funded by one of the originators of Google. For whatever reason, that fascinates me even more.
Mm-hmm.
So do you have anything? Can you segue from blimps to whatever it is that you're going to talk about?
Not very easily, because now I'm going back down to the ground on the car section of things.
See, the problem is you and Sean have similar articles, so you can segue nicely. And I'm like, we've gone from glue to blimps.
The tower at the top of the Empire State Building was for docking blimps.
Ah, well, that's
same with Terminal Tower.
Well, look at that. Look at what I just learned today.
Well, there we go. You learned something new today.
I did.
So kind of going back down to the ground a little bit. So Rivian's EV vans that, if we remember, a couple months ago, Amazon made a big deal with Rivian to make more of these delivery vans for Amazon. Well, Amazon's not the only one buying into these EV vans anymore. AT&T will now start purchasing these Rivian-made fleet vehicles starting in 2024. But they are now the second to make a deal with Rivian for a new delivery van or maintenance van, however you want to put it. So it seems interesting. But they are only buying 100,000, it looks like.
Which seems like a lot.
It seems like a lot, but you understand that if you spread out 100,000 throughout the entire United States, not very many.
Well, okay, I guess I can see that then.
Especially in higher service areas like big cities and rural areas and stuff like that. But yeah, it's, you know, it's kind of interesting to see how many people or how many companies are starting to push EV vehicles nowadays. I mean, true, we're running up on the, we're about 7, almost 6 years away from net zero 2030 if we can do it. So
yes,
we will see how that goes. But now we're slowly starting to see companies buy into the EV market a little bit more, which seems to be going well so far, I think.
As long as you have somewhere to charge it.
Exactly. Which seems like there's more and more places being able to accept charging stations and things now. So it's interesting to see now, though.
It's kind of, yeah. I mean, I'm interested in Rivian as a car company. I think their vehicles are stylistically beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
I just don't think there are enough charging stations or things don't charge fast enough.
Yeah. I mean, with Pilot, well, there's Pilot Flying J saying that they're going to have charging stations at a good majority of their truck stops and gas stations. And then other places are also starting to talk about adding in EV stations at just any of their locations. Company-wise. Now, obviously, you have some that are locally owned that may not buy into it very quickly, but your corporate-owned ones will most likely add in EV stations, mainly along long freeway sections and things, I think is mainly what they were talking about, if I remember correctly.
Well, I mean, that makes sense. I mean, they're making a step forward, and so that's good.
And there's also the charging lanes that they're talking about now, too, where it's going to be the car can drive over it, and then it will just wirelessly charge all the way down the freeway in certain sections, which is kind of cool.
Right, which really you're back to electric cars really being more viable in urban areas or places that have a lot of highways.
Yeah, currently right now, that's the only problem that EVs have. It's just outside of in more, you know, rural areas.
Because I can't really see there's a charging strip going down like the center of Middle Ridge here by the library. I don't think that's going to be
those lanes are mainly freeways, and some cities may add them as just like lanes for EVs. I could see possibly solar for rural areas, but that I don't know how well the tech will charge very quickly.
Well, it wouldn't be charging on a day like today, considering it is very gray. Well,
especially in the month of December here in Ohio, Northeast Ohio especially. It's always gray.
It is.
Especially during December.
Which is a perfect segue, I have decided.
Into what you want to talk about.
Yes, it is. And so I do want to talk about solar energy. And we didn't even plan this one, so I'm super excited that the segue worked amazingly well. So the folks at Caltech are looking out, and there's a comment, isn't it going to be white for you today? I really hope not, but technically I believe the answer is yes.
There's so many mixed reactions on what the weather's going to be like.
So,
but we will see.
I think that, Charlie, we got a little...
Oh, what's this? Hello, I want to...
I think we may need to address that.
Can you right-click on that comment, Bailey, and delete it, please?
So anyway, solar energy. The folks at Caltech are...
appreciate it, but we don't need views and chatbots and things. Thank you.
Yes. Okay. Well, Bailey's taking care of our chatbot that has now gone away, I am going to not as smoothly talk about the folks at Caltech who are looking into how they can take solar energy and bring it back to and save it and bring it back to use for power. So the difference here, because obviously we've been talking solar energy for many, many years. But they want to collect the sunlight in space and then send its energy to Earth. So I think that that's kind of the little bit of a different piece there. So they have been working on a couple of different devices since the beginning of this year. And so the idea is testing the idea of whether they can send energy wirelessly from space to Earth. Hmm. And so they have been doing a variety of tests over 2023. And so they started with looking at trying to control microwaves and ideally sending the energy to the exact location that they're trying to send it to. So this is a big deal for them that they were able to direct the energy to one specific location. So this was basically a proof of concept kind of experiment, and they wanted to prove that they could be able to do this. And so now they have. So the scientists at Caltech have detected the energy, proving that it is possible to send solar energy to Earth from space. And so their hope and what they're looking to try to do long term is to use this as a way to bring energy to places all over the world that need it. Again, looking at the possibility of using this in the aftermath of natural disasters or any kind of disaster, be it natural, man-made, as a way to bring services back online and things like that. So this is really very cool. The amount of experimenting and all the different aspects that have gone into this are just, it's amazing what we are able to do. It's amazing that the innovation that we have before us. So this is, I am kind of excited about what I would consider is the next evolution of solar energy. So this is super duper cool. And since Mr. Sean usually talks about space, at least one of his articles, yep, I feel that we have fulfilled that requirement. Not that there's actually a requirement for talking tech. It's whatever we sort of feel like. But, I mean, there's certain things. There's usually a space thing, car things.
Well, I've covered that so far.
Yes, we've done space. We've done cars. Do you have something about video games?
I mean, all? I do.
Okay, because we usually do one of those.
Yeah, so I guess kind of going into the video game side of things, Microsoft is working on free ad-supported cloud gaming for their Xbox brand. Ad-supported cloud gaming is what the entire thing is talking about. So cloud gaming, for anyone that may not know.
I'm really still back at ad-supported.
Yes. So the ad-supported part has been a lot of subscription services have been going to for cheaper alternatives. So similar to instead of paying more for food story subscription services. Yeah, well, I have something about a subscription service later too, but for right now, ad-supported has been kind of taking over the market for a cheaper alternative for most subscription services, but this would be completely free, but you have to watch an ad or you have to occasionally get ads while you're playing the game. Is what I'm assuming.
Well, that's what I was waiting so for far. You to say, because I'm in the middle of the game, just as you're about to shoot your laser at whatever, now we have an ad for deodorant.
Unless it's going to be like those YouTube ads that come up at the bottom. It's just like a little banner and it's always there. I could see something like that. Or but even then wouldn't
people complain about it in their viewing space and they're not mm-hmm. able to fully immerse themselves in the game?
Well, there was a TV that you can get for free. It is completely ad supported. But what it added was a strip of TV at the bottom, and it was nothing but ads, sports things, all this other stuff. But it would always run at the bottom no matter what you were doing on the TV. But you would get a free, state-of-the-art TV if you signed up for it. But if you wanted to take it without ads, you have to pay for the TV, which is $800, and then buy the TV, and then you get to keep it. And then you can use the mini screen for something else, is what I was told.
Well, that's a great example of the nothing is ever actually free.
Mm-hmm.
So, oh.
They're testing ad support in sports games. And the stadium dynamically updated the ads in game. Oh, okay.
And we also got food story subscription. Right. We talk about that too. Yes. You do tend to.
I keep forgetting they add product placement in games now too. So like certain like billboards and things in certain games will have like actual real life ads.
Yes. And for our commenter, we will, before the end of this, have a food story because I have the most awesome food story, but I figured I was waiting until close to the end because it really makes me happy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, ad-supported gaming, I guess, is a thing now.
I just feel like it's going to pop in and as you're playing the game. And now you have this ad for whatever, because that's when mm-hmm. I'm watching YouTube, that's what happened. It's not like when you're watching commercial TV where they sort of bring mm-hmm. the scene to a closure of some sort and then they go to an ad. Mm-hmm. Whereas like on YouTube and some of the other...
It cuts out in the middle of the video. Right. And
it cuts out in the strangest places where I'm like, wait a second.
Yep.
And then it comes back and I'm like, wait, what were we just doing?
Exactly. It's kind of interesting, though.
But, I mean, I guess like, if it's like the TV and it's a crawl along the bottom, mm-hmm. then it's not...
I mean, that's what I'm thinking it's going to be, but they've also talked about, like, just ads in games in general. So, like, like I said, like, billboards or signs and stuff like that would have a branding logo on it, and then the brand would pay for that spot in the game.
Not unlike TV and movies and mm-hmm. things like that, where, you know, they're all drinking Diet Coke or whatever.
Something
it is.
Like that, yeah.
So that's kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm. It'll make it more accessible for people, especially if they're just getting into it or using it as like a side hobby kind of thing. I could see that.
Okay.
But I don't know. It'll be interesting because you can pay for it, no ads, or you could just not, and you have to just deal with
ads. So are they assuming then that they're going to have more people who want to pay more to not get the ads than the money that they think that they're going to get from ad revenue?
Probably a little bit of both, because they're going to get enough from ad revenue to support the game to be played for free. And then you have the extended option if you wanted to pay for ad or wanted to pay for without ads, which is like $16 a month, I think.
Huh.
So it's either you pay $16 for no ads, or you just don't pay for ads and you don't pay for no ads and you just have ads.
I don't know. I think it really depends on how serious a gamer you are.
Yeah.
Or, you know, what types of games you play.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just find this fascinating. And there is no segue from
I agree with Morgan, though. It'd be good for kids from families without the funds to support gaming. Yeah.
That is true. But then my question is, what ads are you going to have on there?
I think it's going to be kind of generalized to the person. If not, it's going to have to be age restricted.
Because then I would think, like, if you were playing, I'll say my example is Fortnite.
Oh, yeah.
Which told on a regular basis by the kindergartners that I see on the bookmobile that they play Fortnite all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I think theoretically, Fortnite is not for kindergartners.
No.
So if you were, just for purposes of this example.
What is Fortnite's ESRB rating?
If you were, let's just say for purposes of this conversation, that you were playing Fortnite on a cloud-based system, then your commercials, I assume, would be based on the...
It's actually marked as a... Oh, no, this is just... That's not even talking about Fortnite's ESRB rating. It's rated T.
Right, so T for teens. So now your kindergartners are getting ads that are
oriented towards more teens
right.
than what the actual age is supposed to be.
Right, and we're not even going to talk about Five Nights at Freddy's because that's a whole
different
story.
Technically, that's an M-rated game.
Is it really?
If you think about it, most horror games are rated M just for fear factor
so
and sensitive material as
your
well.
Your kindergartner who's playing Five Nights at Freddy's could get kinds of adult commercials. I think this officially qualifies as a talking tech tangent.
Mm-hmm. It's actually 12 plus.
Huh. Interesting.
So it's actually almost, it's not E10 plus, but it would be counted as.
Would it be counted teen, as teen?
Technically.
Huh.
So it's a teen rated game, which I'm actually surprised by.
Oh.
Well, actually, you know what? No, I can't say much because the movie was PG-13. So I guess that is actually relatively fine.
So not at
all. Anyway, going away from the ESRB tangents and ad revenue.
Well, but it's interesting because it's ad revenue and who plays the games versus who the games are nominally marketed to.
Mm-hmm.
I just, that's going to be fascinating because then the next thing is going to be, why is my kid getting advertisements for
insert item here?
Yes, I'm gonna go the insert item here because the ones that pop into my head are glad we're in the same place.
Yeah, I get where you're coming from.
Okay, we're just gonna leave that there and move on to a another topic. So I love orchestral music, so that is one of my things that I enjoy very much. And so I'm on the fence about how I feel. In Seoul, South Korea, several months ago, they had Ever 6, a robot, lead an orchestra performance of new Korean music. So this robot was built by the Korea Institute of Industrial Technology. So it has a human face. It kind of looks like a human, sort of. I mean, it's a robot. And so what it has neck and shoulders and all the different body parts that you think of a conductor needing. So it used AI and has limited movements, and it was trained to perform. So going through the various article, I have to admit the part that really made me giggle is so it's directing a bunch of humans to play this music. And so it was actually the conductor of the Busan Philharmonic Orchestra. So he conducted some pieces and this robot conducted some pieces. So this gentleman's quote in the article is, "The robot was able to present detailed movements much better than I imagined." Then a little bit later, he goes on to say, "Some people think that conducting is just a combination of hand waving and keeping the beat." So what they found, the current downfall with this robot was, and the reason why it would never really replace a human conductor, is the robot can't hear. So it can't go, "Okay, cellos, you're playing a little flat here. Mm-hmm. What's going on? Trumpets, what, you know, you're really loud. You need to come down and pitch." It can't sense any of those things. So it's a good conductor needs to listen to the orchestra so he can correct and encourage the orchestra as it plays. I don't know why this article is just bringing me so much joy. But it's fascinating to see where people are trying to take this technology. I just can't imagine, you go pay for your tickets and you're going to the New York Philharmonic and now there's this robot up there. Or, you're going to go to the Boston Pops and you're ready to see Keith Lockhart and instead there's a robot. I don't know. I love the idea of it, but I cannot see it in a long term because I agree with what he's saying. He believes that robots would be helpful in practice situations where the same thing needs to be repeated multiple times. I mean, I could see that because these particularly people learning instruments, for the number of times they need to practice, you might really not want to be there while someone's screeching or whatever. But this is just so very cool that someone even thought enough to try to have this happen. So that is my article about robot music conducting. I don't know that you can segue out of that into anything.
Not really, but I mean, I can say that we're going to talk about subscription service again. We kind of talked about it with the Xbox one that we were talking about earlier, but Disney Plus and Hulu is a possibility of being one app now, because Disney, with buying out Fox and all these other places as well.
So do they have majority interest in Hulu now?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I thought.
So since Disney has a good majority of Hulu's library now, considering that they bought out Fox, or have a stake in Fox, however they said it was, now you may be able to have Hulu and Disney Plus in one app. It would be under the Disney Plus app. So it would be removing Hulu.
Oh, wow.
And be able to use it all in one app. If not, then eventually it will just become Disney Plus, and then Hulu gets taken out for whatever reason. So, but it's only in beta. It's not an official thing just yet. So they're just testing it for right now. But it would have a separate section for Hulu-based items.
Okay.
So if, like, let's say someone made an exclusive deal for Hulu and not Disney, it would be under the Hulu section, and you would just search through Hulu's library that way. So it's still kind of separate from all the Disney stuff that's there, but it would be in its own little section. And I'm assuming they did that just for parental control and everything else as well, considering that will happen. It would be interesting, though, because I have both. So it would be nice to have one app instead of switching between two of them. Consistently, but that's just me.
I keep thinking about Disney Plus, and then I look at that price tag. I'm like, I don't even watch what I currently have. So, nope, I don't need that.
Yeah, I mean, it happens.
It's tough. I mean, but I know a lot of people who do the three bundle. The Hulu, ESPN,
Plus, Hulu, and Disney Plus. Yes, that's what I do.
I know quite a few people who that's like their thing. That's it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, actually, really, if you think about it, it's cheaper to do it that way.
Well, that's what a couple of people
told
me.
Even if you don't use the ESPN one that often, it's still worth it for just Hulu and Disney Plus, I think. But that's just me coming from my own opinion.
Right, but, because we don't endorse any commercial things. We just chit-chat about stuff that we find.
Exactly.
Find in the news. All right. Well, that's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
So I am leaving my... my food thing for the end, because we're not at that point yet. So I think I'm going to go to,
What are you going to do?
I'm having trouble because they're all interesting for different reasons.
I
mean,
I have a really quick short one.
Because I cannot decide.
Do your decision making.
So it shouldn't be this hard to decide.
Mine's relatively quick because it's only something about what Lego has released as of late.
But Lego's always
It's
good.
A Lego Polaroid camera that actually, well, it doesn't take pictures, but it will actually pop out a photo like you developed it from a Polaroid, which is really cool.
But it doesn't take the picture. So where's the picture coming from?
Now, I could see people making slight like little kits that you could put a camera into. Because assuming that the size is what I'm seeing here, you could probably fit a GoPro in it
and
take pictures with it. Right. But that's me. I don't know if anyone's actually going to do that or so, but it is a replica of the original Polaroid camera that would be able to develop photos.
Oh, so it's like retro wrapped in Lego.
Mm-hmm. And even the little picture has like a little minifig picture in it that pops out when you hit the button. So for the development button, it's really cool. I don't know how much it is, but I know it has released recently because I've seen it on their website. But essentially, it's just really another cool Lego idea set that they've come out with within the past couple years. Because they've done like retro consoles and all this kind of stuff lately. So it's kind of cool to see what Lego can actually make in replica, which is really cool. And it's relatively nice looking replica of a Polaroid camera as well. So... might be on a Christmas list come next year, as long as it's still in production, at least for me. Because I'm a
Polaroids were not great Lego when they nerd. Came out the first time, though.
Well, then
I mean, they were really exciting of what they were technology-wise. But in terms of having a great photo, they were never. Yeah.
I mean, you don't need to have a great photo if it just, like, you get the photo instantly.
Yeah.
Well, kind of. Not really.
I think Bailey's giving us eyes like she does not agree. She's been trying hard to stay neutral this whole time.
A microphone, we could give Bailey the microphone to voice her opinion on the whole subject matter as well, but Bailey may not want
to
speak.
She has been trying to be neutral and make no
comments.
No comments, no facial expressions, which is very impressive because that I've never been able to do that. So I have decided on what I want to talk about.
Talk about your decided article.
So my decided article, because my issue is I don't know how I feel about this.
Okay.
So Google, which generally I am a Google fan. Mm-hmm. So they are talking about using artificial intelligence technology to create a bird's eye view of users' lives using their mobile phone data, such as photographs and searches. That just creeps me out.
So are we talking
in terms
like,
of like Big Brother, like watching you
I
sort
could,
of
I could
thing.
See this being like, you know, like how Spotify does the Wrapped every year. It's just like a wrap of like, oh, here's what you did this year. And
yes.
It's just like an entire story of what you did all summer or all year. Essentially
what they're trying to do. And I guess they did a presentation. This was an article from CNBC. And so it aims to be your life storyteller. And so it's a very beginning topic of conversation. I think it's kind of like back to the windshield thing from earlier. They are just starting to talk about this and what they might want to do with it. So they're looking at it as having to do with their AI model, which they call Gemini. And so they're looking to kind of combine Gemini with some of the other Google products. And so supposedly this is going to allow you to maybe get better answers to questions when you're asking Google questions, because this way the AI will have a better idea of what's going on in your life and they can answer your questions better. This is this just seems so creepy. I mean, I love the quotes. We can't answer tough questions or tell good stories without a bird's eye view of your life. Will trawl through your photos, looking at their tags and locations to identify meaningful moments. And when we step back and understand your life in its entirety, your overarching story becomes clear. I am just deeply disturbed by this.
This is like invasion of privacy, at least in my eyes.
So clearly, if someone else wants to explain why this seems like a good, this scares the bejesus out of me. I don't think I want my phone trawling my photos. Yes. I mean, because as I look through this article more, we look through your presentation, it infers moments like a user's childbirth. This technology can use knowledge from higher in the tree to infer that this is your child. And oh my goodness, it just seems...
You'd be running into so many legal problems with that.
It displayed a sample chat in which the user asked, "Do I have a pet?" To which the answer was yes. The user has a dog, which wore a red raincoat, and then offered the dog's name and the names of two family members it's most often seen with. I'm sorry, Bailey. That probably was a bad noise for... But ew, my golly, that just... I can't handle that.
Now, see, I like the progression of how AI is developing, but this is a little too fast, too quick kind of thing going on.
It also can the person doing it presented a summary of the user's eating habits. Other slides showed you seem to enjoy Italian food. There are several photos of pasta dishes as well as a photo of a pizza.
What if I was taking those pictures to tell people not to come back here again? Or that I'm terrible at making pasta dishes. Oh.
So I guess this is part, Apple is kind of looking at something similar for a journal app that will use on-device AI to create personalized suggestions to prompt users to write passages that describe their memories and experiences based on recent photos, location, music, and workouts. Oh my God. I don't think I want to write about what songs I used to go on the treadmill. I went on the treadmill. This is what I felt like listening to. I'm clearly missing something here. I don't know what it is that I'm missing, but I'm missing something. I am really, this just creeps me out.
Like I said, I don't mind the progression of certain things, but I feel like AI
it could talk to you about your food, Charlie.
Well, my food choices are very, very relative to fast food places at times. So it's just like,
well, you're going to have to stop taking pictures of your food now.
Yeah.
Because now it's going to talk to you about your food.
Yeah, I'll pass on that. I don't need to be judged by my food taste.
I don't know. This.
I mean, maybe it will turn out to be something that's really cool and really awesome at some point. But right now, the concept of this idea just seems very invasive and very different ways.
That's my problem. It seems more invasive than helpful. Like the only thing that I could
I could see it if like, oh, I forgot this person's name. What is their name? And you look for it. That AI could help with that. Because if you remember the dog's name or you remember the person that they are related to's name, then maybe that'd be fine if it's only doing for research. But if you're doing this just for, you know, personal searching, no, no.
And then I think about, well, you know, we're going through pictures that my grandparents took and things like that. And we're going, you know, who are these people? At a certain point, you know, 50, 60 years from now, you can, oh, you know, it's all on a cell phone. So, you know, we can go through and figure out, well, that was Johnny when he was 3 and Johnny when he was 8. And now Johnny is 45 or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But then that assumes that you have access to a previous person's phone and you can still get to it. And that assumes kinda, a lot of other
unless things. They're going to start doing like accounts pass on to I don't know. I don't want to get into that now.
it seems very...
It's an interesting concept, but I'll have to see how it kind of gets drawn out for future reference. Because for right now, like I said, this is like kind of a little bit of like a infringing on personal protection rights and stuff and right now.
That's one that I'm personally... a lot of issues with. My phone's probably busy being offended right now that we're having this conversation.
Yeah.
Because it's sitting here next to me. So, I mean, I don't know. My phone could be really angry and I maybe won't be able to make calls later today or something. I don't know. All right. Do you have an article? Because we probably have time for, I would guess, two more.
Two more?
I think so. So one for you and I'll finish up with my food one unless you have a food one.
Well, I don't have a food one. Actually, I didn't find much food ones, so we'll see. But I do have another car one.
Cars are always good.
This one's more related to the Tesla Cybertruck that we've all been seeing very interesting things about as of late, especially with how they haven't really been able to get them released when they say because they rescheduled the release of this truck probably 7 times now.
I was gonna say, it's been a lot of times, I thought.
But now we're starting to get an understanding how much pieces and parts are going to cost. So if you do buy a Cybertruck, this article is talking about how much the infamous windshield wiper, the single blade windshield wiper that Tesla has been pushing for a couple years now, how much it's going to be to replace it, how much it is going to be for the part, and how much it is going to be for the wiper blade that you have to use.
I don't think I want to know.
That's the problem, but I know some people do, because if they're interested in the Cybertruck, then they have to know what parts cost. Because if parts cost too much, then what's the point of buying a Cybertruck?
Okay, so how... So, I'm assuming it's not like going to AutoZone and just buying your windshield wiper parts, which I feel like is expensive enough as it is.
Yeah, I mean, eventually you'll see aftermarket stuff come into the market, but for right now, the official price for the entire arm and blade assembly for a Cybertruck is $165.
Oh.
And that is just the assembly for the arm and the attachment for the blade.
So what is the cost of the blade, she asked concernedly. Did they include that or that's still a miss? Oh.
$75 just for the wiper blade. Because it is one. So to understand the Cybertruck. So again, it is one full arm that goes the length of the entire windshield. Okay.
Okay.
And it also, I think, was this the Cybertruck, the one that extends out, wipes the edge? I can't remember. I there was like concepts.
It should
of that
like
for a while.
Wipe it with a cloth and a few other things for that.
Well,
amount
if
of money.
You're looking at, oh, and then they even talk about how some of the other parts. But anyway, we're worried about the wiper blade right now. But I think this is also the one that extends out and wipes the rest of the windshield in one blade. So
it should for that cost.
Yes. So
I can
also tell you how much a windshield will cost for this as well.
Oh, we're already so like, deep into
like,
this.
There's,
I think
there's
we need
lists
to...
and lists of like how much certain things will be.
So when you get a rock that's bumped off the road and you have to replace the windshield of the Cybertruck, how much is this going to cost?
So the replaceable cost of a windshield for a Cybertruck is nearly $2,000.
I don't feel like that's going to be covered under my insurance.
So it is $1,900 it will cost you to replace the windshield on your Cybertruck if it somehow breaks and other things. Well, I mean,
someone just whispered, I would just buy a new car.
Yes. But I mean, the problem with EVs nowadays too, is that the batteries are the main cost of the car. So you're essentially paying for a new car.
I don't know, a $2,000 windshield seems kind of a lot.
Yes, I do agree. But also, let's talk about the baseball proof side glass. So remember how they were talking that the Cybertruck's supposed to be bulletproof glass?
Okay,
or bulletproof
well,
rated glass or like shatterproof glass.
Then $2,000, I guess, sort of makes sense.
Yeah, but I don't remember if it's the windshield that counts as also like shatter resistant. But I remember like the side glass was the big talk for a while because it shattered back in 2019 when they officially announced the Cybertruck being a thing, and it shattered as the creator threw a baseball at it and it shattered with the baseball stuck in it.
Great graphic, bad for Tesla.
But anyway, so the merely baseball-proof side windows will run between $225 to $260 per chunk of glass.
Oh, my goodness. And why are you going to park a car that expensive anywhere near where there could be a baseball? That is my other question. If you are paying for a car that is worth that much, it better be in a garage.
It'll be in the garage forever.
Right. I mean, where
I mean,
would you take it out?
Until parts get cheaper.
You wouldn't want to take it out because someone like flings an acorn at it and you would have a problem.
But yeah, so those are some of the parts that Tesla started listing on their website for replacements. Now, obviously, this may not be completely final or anything. It may go up and down depending on how that goes. But those are just some of the parts and how much they're going to be if you ever break them, decide to replace them, however you need to, with a Cybertruck.
Oh, my golly.
It is interesting.
I don't think I have any other comment other than, oh, my word.
Yes. Especially for how much you're already paying for a Cybertruck. So
yes.
I think it's like almost 100. Is it 100,000 for a Cybertruck?
Oh my word.
60. Oh no, it's a 60K up.
Only $60,000.
Supposedly.
That is a veritable bargain. That is junk. God, I can't even.
Oh, wait. No, never mind. Hold on. New base price revealed here, okay? Base price for a Tesla Cybertruck is $99,990 So $99,000, almost $100,000.
Because they can't actually make it $100,000 because that's when people would lose their marbles.
Yes. But originally, when it was announced in 2019, it was only supposed to be $60,000.
Well, but given how much,
$61,000.
How much inflation has happened in those intervening times, that probably is not that out of line, really.
Mm-hmm. Not too much.
Wow.
But it almost doubled in its price since it was announced in 2019.
And now you can pay $2,000 to replace your windshield.
Mm-hmm. If you ever decide, or if you can ever get your Cybertruck that you pre-ordered, it keeps getting rolled back.
Wow.
But yeah, so that's just some of the pieces for the Cybertruck.
Oh,
and we ranted about this for probably a little bit longer than we should have. But
well,
that's besides the point.
But it was a worthwhile rant over very expensive car parts. But mm-hmm. I still feel like I want to end on a food article.
Yes.
Which is Columbia University 3D printed a cheesecake. Oh, that just brings me such joy.
Hmm.
Oh my golly. Okay, so we have talked numerous times about 3D printers on Talking Tech. I think even I did the last time that I filled in. So at Columbia University in New York, they revealed recently that they 3D printed a cheesecake, but more importantly, it also cooked it. So this just makes me so happy. Hmm. So, has been some of the challenges that as different entities have been trying to 3D print food is that they still have to either be baked or fried or cooked in some way in order for the item to be safely consumed. So the folks at Columbia have a 7-ingredient cheesecake. And so they are very, very excited about this because they got all of the ingredients to be a consistency that it could be extruded through the syringe print head of a 3D printer. So this article talks about how they had to get the graham cracker pieces with water and butter and trying to make it both edible and also able to be extruded. And so... So it was a Nutella peanut butter and strawberry jam was part of the ingredients,
okay,
as well as bananas, graham crackers, and I feel like they've left out some ingredients because that is not 7. So they layered everything. So unfortunately, the images that they include in this article about how the cheesecake is layered, when you bite into it, you feel the flavors hit you in different waves. And that's a function of the layering inside the structure. Hmm. I just can't believe they're talking about a piece of cheesecake the same way that they talk about, you know, printing out a chess piece or
and layers. And
yes.
Stuff like that, too.
It is. Hmm. So where they feel this is going is that it's toward the plant-based meat market because they want to be able to customize food, have healthier food that they can extrude. I am just in love with a 3D printed piece of cheesecake. Now, part of me really would like to try this and the other part says, nah, I'll let somebody else eat it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I really wonder how they handle like allergy things because that cheesecake is like a lot of allergens waiting to happen. And so you'd have to be really, really careful as far as cleaning bits and parts.
It would probably have to be either it's one printer and it's cleaned after every use, or it's going to be one printer does anything with allergens and the other one is strictly no allergen. I could see that.
I would think so. But I find this absolutely and utterly fascinating. Mm. You could get a 3D printed piece of cheesecake.
In far but somewhat near future.
Yes.
Because I don't think this is ready to go to mass market.
No, but you could eat your 3D printed piece of cheesecake in your 3D printed home. This sounds very Jetsons. It really does.
Until we eventually just get animation of just, or creation of just the food in front of you instead of 3D printing it and waiting for it to be 3D printed.
This sounds so like Jetsons and Star Trek. And I feel that we have somehow, Charlie, and I don't know how, we have managed to fill a whole hour.
An entire hour. After we thought that we weren't going to.
Exciting pieces of news. I think they were kind of fun. Mm-hmm. So this is my time to invite you to join us again on the third Monday in January, where Sean should be back and Charlie will be here and everybody will be where they're supposed to be. And you can join us for tech news. Now, please feel free to, if you're watching or listening to this later, please feel free to comment along if you have questions or something like that. Excuse me, we can reach out to you later if you have a tech question that came up as a result of something you heard or we were talking about. So please feel free to do that. We'd love to have you join us again in January. And in the meantime, have a wonderful holiday season. Happy New Year, and we'll see you in 2024.